the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit. Oh.
My name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I'll come in here. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion for our film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire, in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Mike!
All right, co-host Mike, I don't know what that means, but okay. Oh, I get it now. I get it. It's from the movie. Gotcha. Yes, Mike from New York and in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
Going well.
Excellent. And we do have a special guest tonight from the state of California.
Hi.
And who's hi?
I'm Dan Lynch.
Dan Lynch, actor extraordinaire. Before we begin and do a little house cleaning for people who have stumbled upon us. Who are you, Dan, and what do you do?
I'm a professional actor and wannabe producer of films. I've been acting for a long time. People probably who do know my work know me from Circle, which is on Netflix, which is a science fiction psychological thriller. Or on Amazon Prime, they might know me from the horror anthology Patient 7.
Excellent. And you were in The Lurking Man, too, I think?
I was also on Amazon Prime in The Lurking Man. I play Death.
Excellent. Very well. And you also do a lot of stage work, too.
I do. Well, Phil, you know what? I'm going to hire you as my agent.
Excellent.
Yes, so, I'm a member of all the unions, so I've done a lot of stage work. I just recently finished a wonderful play called The Manor out in Beverly Hills with a theater company known as Theater 40, a murder mystery. It's actually a fictionalized retelling, but a lot of truth in there about the murder-suicide and the Teapot Dome scandal involving Ned Doheny. And recently I did a theater company out here called A Noise Within. We did a play about the picture of Dorian Gray, which is a wonderful adaptation.
Nice, nice. Excellent. So, and,
So Dan, I was just curious, do you ever like go onto like a chat thread somewhere about Circle and like just search Sweater Man and see what they have to say about you? Because I can tell you it's not nice things.
You know, I don't do threads other than Twitter.
I was going to say, come on now. I've seen you do it on Twitter.
I'm fairly present in the Twitterverse, and I do pretty frequently check into Circle. And yeah, there's some people who've said so, but you know, it's always in a very complimentary way. You know, it's always, God, your performance was wonderful, but I hated your character. And to me, that's a very a high sign of praise, because it means I did my job right, because you should hate that character.
And that's actually how we met Dan, was through
that's
Twitter.
Right.
He's very, very active on Twitter, so people should follow him there. All right. So
do you know who else is active on Twitter?
A lot of people.
Not us.
That's true.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah,
not dark discussions is what I am.
Right. Now, let's see. For people who have stumbled upon us and wonder who we are Dark Discussions Podcast, which is part of the Dark Discussions News Network, www.darkdiscussions.com. It's an all-genre news website for horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, farm films, midnight movies, and the like. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. The website is updated all the time, so people who follow genre and art house news should go there all the time, every day. So you can find articles, release notices, podcasts, and so forth. We do have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com, or you can just press the contact us form on the website. And also we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. And we do have a Twitter called Dark Discussion 1, which isn't that active, though, during the discovery of witches, demons, and vampires. We got a lot of discussion over there, but that podcast is now in hiatus. So season 3 is whatever it is after they film it, they put it together. But anyway, post-production, thank you. So, Eric, what else can people find on the darkdiscussions.com?
They can find a link to our Patreon page. You can also get there by going to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. That is how you can support us financially, which we would greatly appreciate. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like movie rentals and equipment and server hosting fees and websites and all that kind of good stuff.
Clean underwear.
So if you would like to help us in that regard, that's how you can do it. For every $5 a month that you care to contribute, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show about. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw one at random on a quarterly basis to do a show about. So if you're interested in supporting us in that way, we'd really appreciate any contributions. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or you can find the Patreon link on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
Yes, and we actually did have another fee of $150 for a year subscription of Zoom, because it was needed to interview for the interview podcast that we do on the side. There was the one we were using would only allow 4, and so that system didn't work. And then we had if we use Zoom, you only have 43 minutes, and so. I just dumped the money to get the year subscription and whatnot. So any money that you want to donate is greatly appreciated and will help. However, we're here free otherwise, and hopefully you will follow us either way. All right. So if we have any news or anything of that note, we will talk about it at the end of the episode. Right now it's April 8th, 2021. So folks who are curious, sometimes these episodes don't come out the very next week after they're recorded. And one of our listeners, Pam, was always curious to know the stamp date of the recording just for her, I guess, OCDs.
Perspective, as of this recording, Ed Asner is still alive.
That is true. I screwed that one up. Yes. Well, I confused him with the chef from Alice. I forget that guy's name.
Think it's fun to not let you live it down.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, the guy from Alice, he looks just like Ed Asner, you know?
Yeah. It's Mel's Diner. I can't remember what his
Mel. The guy that played Mel. Vic Tayback.
That's it. But at some point in the future, someone will be listening to this, maybe, and he won't be.
Right, so let's make sure that's...
And that could be, like, any second now.
Stop! You're horrible, Mike.
Yeah, Mike is a bad guy. Anyway, I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to be talking about the 2021 film that you can find streaming on Netflix called The Block Island Sound.
The island is a totally different beast this time of year.
What's going on down at West Beach?
Well, we've got a bit of a fish problem.
My strange much activity lately, man. Hear about all them dead fish? Or about Andy Gould's catch a few weeks back?
Dead fish?
Birds.
Something's wrong. Something with the island. You know it, I know it. I want to get to the bottom of it.
You gotta get him away from there. Pretty soon, someone's gonna end up hurt.
Emily, listen to me.
It's only gonna get worse. Somebody's gonna end up dead. You hear me?
Harry!
That's right. The Block Island Sound is technically a 2020 film, but it came out on Netflix in 2021. So to everyone everywhere in 2021, though it did festival circuits in 2020. It's directed by Kevin McManus and Matthew McManus, who we assume are related.
Are they related?
I think they're related to the lead actress, too, who is named
Michaela.
Michaela McManus. But either way,
it's Rhode Island. They're all related.
Yes. Yeah. Michaela McManus, I believe, is from Rhode Island, so I assume they're all Rhode Islanders. Block Island Sound takes place in Rhode Island, which is the sound just after you leave Connecticut. And it's between Block Island and the coast. The film also stars a couple of other folks, including the lead actor Chris Sheffield as Harry. There's also Neville Archambault as Tom, who plays the father of both Audrey, which is played by Michaela McManus. And then there's Heidi Niedermeyer as Jen, who's another sister. And then there's a couple of other characters, actors and whatnot. But
including friend of the show, Jeremy Holm.
That's right. I forgot to mention that. You mean the Ranger?
His name's actually Jeremy Holm.
Yes. Yes, it is.
His name is Ranger.
Yes,
and it also has a smaller part with Jim Cummings, who was in the Wolf of Snow Hollow last year.
Oh, how about that?
He was the writer, director, and star of that movie.
And what role did he play in this movie here?
He was the conspiracy theorist.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, he's a good actor. Mm-hmm. All right, so I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And since it was brought to our attention by Eric Webster, Eric, how did you hear about this and what did you think?
I heard about it because I followed Jeremy Holm on social media, and he was letting people know that it was going to be available. So coincidentally, I'm trying to cut costs a little bit on my multiple streaming services. So I decided to shut Netflix off for a while. And the day that this movie became available was the very last day that my Netflix account was active. So I watched it right away.
Some timing.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I really enjoyed one aspect in particular. There was a kind of a voiceover towards the end that tied back into something that had been said earlier in the movie, which I particularly found meaningful and thought was kind of cool. I thought the acting was good. I thought the story was a little bit confusing for a while, but once it all comes together, it's pretty rocking. I enjoyed it.
All right, very good. Also, co-host Abe from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has joined us. And Abe, how did you hear about this film and what did you think of it?
I heard about it because we have updates on the little message on the messenger about what our next topic would be. And this was what everyone decided on. And, I had a Netflix account and got right to watching it. And pretty much. I'm echoing a lot of what Eric said. Overall, I thought this was a really good film. I liked it. I thought performance-wise, it was very strong. Characters here were kind of hit and miss for me, particularly its main character. But I found the focus on the psychological science fiction horror was very interesting, especially it's a kind of parallel to real mental illness, which is very unsettling. And there was some really cool mystery set up and a pretty decent payoff at the end. It's a slow burn kind of science fiction film. And if that's not your cup of tea, you might not enjoy it too much, but it is well made. And it's going to be interesting little thing to dig deeper into. Can't talk about too much because doing so might kind of go into spoiler territory. So I'll share those thoughts as we get into that.
All right, sounds good. I heard about this film through Eric Webster. Eric Webster said that, oh, Phil, this is a film that you will like. So I said, oh, all right, that's interesting. So I watched it last night or two nights ago. I really enjoyed this film a lot, especially the mystery, because you didn't know what the issue was until late in the film. And when that mystery appears, it was awesome because it's my favorite type of monster. But the film,
and for listeners of the podcast, that's now a spoiler, just saying.
Right, that's why I just said the monster. I didn't say the type. So
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Listeners of the podcast now know what it is.
Yeah, that's fair. There was four things that make this film even better than just being a good film. Oh, and the first is the movie has Narragansett beer prominently displayed.
So irrelevant.
The second is the movie takes place in New England, specifically Rhode Island.
Irrelevant.
The movie is about my favorite monster.
Okay, that's relevant.
And the most important one of all, the movie takes place 15 miles from Taylor Swift's home.
Completely irrelevant.
God.
Even the one that's relevant really is only relevant to film.
And that one, that the last one, both me and Abe went to that location, and I got my picture taken.
You were probably in the car when you decided to go there? Yeah.
I was also trapped in that goddamn music, too.
Like Eric said, if you don't like it, drive yourself, kid.
I can easily do that now, thank God.
And he could probably also bench press you now, Phil, so.
30 years from now, Phil's going to be telling that story over and over again.
He's probably on his
top. His poor kids are going to be like, oh my God, Dad's telling that story again.
Yeah, he's probably on a watch list now, too.
Anyway, we have some more folks here. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, so I can guarantee you that my take on the film is going to be a poor one in terms of the rest of you, and not because I thought it was a poor film, but because I tried watching it last night. And the night before, on Tuesday, for those who have been listening to the podcast, I've mentioned I've been getting these eye injections, you know, because in preparation for the new Dune movie coming out. So my eyes was bothering me longer than usual, and I literally found it hard to watch the movie last night. So I had it on. I was more listening to it than watching it, and that isn't necessarily very conducive to getting a great read on the film. So I can't. I'm not really going to be able to give a firm opinion on it one way or another. There is a lot in there that seemed like it was good. I think the performances were solid, and you know, use of the setting was solid. And I've been to Block Island a couple of times, so I'm vaguely familiar with it. And, you know, it's really not any different than, you know, coastal New England or east end of Long Island. It's, you know, all a lot of the same crap. I didn't necessarily think of where it was going. It was misleading me into thinking going one place and then it ended up going another.
Yep.
And I don't know if I liked that or not. To be honest with you, because on my side of the aisle, I would prefer the monsters that they were hinting at.
Right.
But as I've often said, you have to enjoy the film that they make for you, not the one you wanted them to make.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be curious to see which monster you're referring to, because I'm not sure.
Oh, I know what he's talking about.
I do, too.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. It wasn't something by Michael Bay.
Oh, I see.
But like I said, so it just in terms of this is a film that, you know, I think you have to pay attention to, and I think it bears watching closely, and I wasn't really able to do that. So I am apologizing now if any of the filmmakers are listening to this, that I can't really give a full-throated yay or nay to it one way or another. I liked what I saw, but I wasn't fully engaged because I couldn't be fully engaged. That's all on me.
Fair enough. And if I can find them on Twitter, I will be linking them to the episode when it comes out. So they may actually be listening to it. You never know. All right. Sounds good. So let's go to Barrett.
I heard about this film from you, and I watched it the other day, and I really enjoyed it. I thought there was good acting, and like Eric, I really liked the end sequence. It was really well done. It kind of closed out the film really well for me. So, yeah, I enjoyed the film. It was good.
All right. And the big man himself, Mr. Dan Lynch.
Wow, I think I'm going to be the only voice of dissent. Now, I want to preface by saying that the movie itself, the anyone who can make a movie nowadays it has my just unbelievable love, because it's such a difficult time to make a film. And this is a lovely film, and it's visually stunning. I thought all of the performances were remarkable. I mean, truly, from the leads on down. I thought all of the acting was just super excellent. I had a problem with the, as I mentioned to Phil in an earlier text, it felt a little disjointed to me, which I think might be what Michael was kind of referring to. It felt like it was going one way and then another way. And I had some problems with some of the logic. I found some of the characters' logic to be flawed. And that bothered me and took me out of the film a little bit. And unlike everybody else, I really had a problem with that ending. So when we get past spoilers and all, I can tell you why I had a problem with that. But overall, it was a beautiful film and truly remarkable for all of the effects that they were able to get done and done so well. And again, the performances were just fantastic.
All right, very good. So folks who are curious about the film, or even care, I should say, the film is getting about 96% on Rotten Tomatoes with over 26 reviews. So the film is getting pretty decent reviews by critics. All right, so.
Which you swore off of last week.
That's why I said... if people care, because that doesn't mean I care, but maybe other people who listen to this podcast do. I don't know. Anyway, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. Something lurks off the coast of Block Island, silently influencing the behavior of fisherman Tom Lynch after suffering a series of violent outbursts, he unknowingly puts his family in grave danger.
All right. Yeah, this makes sense. That's good enough.
I don't know where outbursts came from.
Yeah, that's all right.
it happens.
So for folks who are curious, Block Island Sound, what is that? Basically, we mentioned that it takes place on Block Island. Block Island is a resort island off the coast of Rhode Island, which is and part of the state of Rhode Island. It's probably most famous recently, at least in the last 20-something years, for the location where JFK Jr., his wife, and his sister-in-law were heading when they crashed and unfortunately perished in a plane crash. It's a very wealthy resort community. One of the characters, Jen, who's one of the sisters, actually mentions that during the summer it's filled with multimillionaires. And even when the locals say that the teeny houses nowadays could sell for $2 million just because of their location, which is Block Island. So it's one of those type of communities, similar to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket, that are in Massachusetts.
Right.
Or
if
as
you,
Mike mentioned, the Hamptons in Long Island. What's up?
Right. If you think of Long Island, you know, which is if Florida is America's Wang, Long Island is New York's Wang, and it's pointing right at Block Island.
Yes, that is actually right. Yep, absolutely. So that's where it takes place, and the sound is this big water between the island and Taylor Swift's house, basically. So separate from Long Island Sound or the Atlantic Ocean, even though it's all the same water, basically. All right, so I guess we can get into just general topics at first before we do throw up the spoiler alert, because as people who know about the podcast or have just landed upon us, we don't just review, we also critique. So we just dissect and critique specific scenes, symbolism, whatever, all sorts of things and whatnot. So we will have a spoiler section very shortly. But before then, does anybody want to bring up anything that is not spoiler? Anybody? Anyone? General things about this
type of
stuff?
I'll just say that I agree with Mike that initially I thought this was headed somewhere different. And so it was a little bit of a surprise when it was eventually revealed what was going on.
Yeah, when I texted you, Eric, and I also actually texted you too, Barrett, I was like screaming it as I was texting it, saying, oh my God, this movie's about the bleep bleep. Yes!
Because Bill doesn't care who he spoils outside of the podcast.
Well, they had already seen the film. Oh, well, actually, Eric had already seen it. Barrett, I don't think, had, but yeah. But either way, yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I had no idea what this film, what the creature was or what the issue was until late into the film. I didn't even think it was where you, Mike, were thinking it was going. I honestly had no idea what it was.
Well, the film starts kind of with a conversation between two of the lead actors. Right. One who's actually the lead actor and the other who is like his friend, who's a conspiracy nut. And, you know, he's like pretty much everything out there. But the main thing he's harping on about is the
whatever it is. Yeah.
Obsidian. Right. The little worms in parasites and cat shit. That infect mice and get them to lose their fear of cats, which of course benefits the cats because the mice don't run away. And the lead actor is too stupid to figure out that's why it's a benefit to the cats to not make the mice afraid of them. But anyway, so there's definitely hints there that they're kind of leaning that way. There's a scene where which ends up being a dream sequence in which the lead actor vomits up worms.
See, so you're talking about something completely different than what I was considering.
I'm going the same place that Eric was going to.
So I was expecting something, and there's a thing in the ocean that's killing fish and killing birds. So it was the idea that there was something in the ocean that was killing people, and I was going with either parasites or sea monster of some sort.
Yeah, I was in Mike's boat.
Be careful, you're getting into spoiler territory now.
Yeah, we're kind of already. Yeah, I guess we might as well just jump right in it now.
Yeah, Eric, you thought it was going to be Cthulhu or something like that?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, and Dan, what, you were thinking the same thing as Eric?
It started with that conversation, and I thought, you know, this is going with the fungus in the ants that makes them go to the top and release spores that controls their brain. So it seemed like they were, again, do you want to throw out a spoiler? Because I don't want to give shit away.
Yeah, all right. Well, there's
more general topics to discuss, because I have a lot to say about this.
Yeah, I was honestly thinking we're going into some kind of a Lovecraftian sea creature territory, because at first I thought we were going through some kind of – at first the direction I thought I was going to go for some kind of metamorphous body horror where people were returning to the sea or something.
Oh, I see. That's interesting.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
All right. I know Barrett – I knew in advance because I kind of spoiled it for you, Barrett. I apologize. But – either way, we give a quick synopsis of the beginning before we throw up the spoiler alert. But basically, there's a father and son, adult son, that live on the island, Block Island. The father's a fisherman named Tom, and his son is kind of just a handyman type guy, no real skill or job or anything. Basically, Tom begins to act very weird. Also on the island, as people have mentioned, fish and birds have been dying. Audrey, who's Tom's daughter and Harry's sister, is sent over by the EPA to investigate. She doesn't want to go because the family's been not too close ever since the mother passed away. And even the mother, I think the mother may have been a bad spot for everybody because she was kind of, a townie, as the best word I can say that without being insulting. And so she goes over with her young daughter. It appears she's a divorcee or a widower. They never say, or not a widower, a widow. And they never say, but either way, she goes over.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. She could have never been married and just been a single mom. You're absolutely right. She, a 10-year-old daughter or something like that. And that's pretty much the setup of the film. That's pretty much it. So we will throw up the spoiler alert now. So we will review, dissect everything and anything and discuss everything and anything. So, all right. So spoiler alert is up.
Okay, and my first thought upon watching this film was that, oh shit, Phil's going to hate this movie. Because we didn't even get to the opening credits and they killed off a dog.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Well, you didn't know that they killed off a dog. You just saw an empty collar.
Yeah, but that wouldn't matter. Yes.
yeah, that was...
I mean, it was a little dog from the size of the collar.
Yeah.
I thought it was the smaller, the more okay it is.
Yes.
Yeah, little dogs.
Yes, it is. They're not real. They're rats.
Oh, boy.
They're rats with hairy tails.
They're cats. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the leash looked like a normal leash. It could have been any type of dog. But yeah, that's true. That's true.
I honestly thought it was a cat first because they did mention the crazy cat lady in town.
Oh, right. Yeah. Again, that went with that initial conversation about the toxoplasm, whatever.
Mm-hmm. The reason I was thinking monster is that the condition on the boat, like the stuff was thrown all over the place.
Yeah.
That's why I had
that. Oh, and you hear that weird noise, too.
Well, also, the collar was not... there's also the collar was over the side of the boat, so I thought he dipped the dog or cat over the side.
Like a chum.
I didn't think he did because he woke up unconscious and he was like shocked that the dog was gone. So I assumed something happened. His boat was attacked.
Right, and I think that was I think you were meant to think that. It's very clear. You know, he wakes up and he's just kind of on his side, and he's clearly, you know, there's been things disarrayed on the boat, and there's an empty collar, and he's very confused. So.
Yeah, so there's a lot of red herrings here because, like, yeah, that's red herring, right? Because it looks like it's a sea monster or Cthulhu or something. And then the comment about those worms obviously was intentionally put in there to make us think, you know, another red herring that maybe it's going to be some bacteria or worm or something like that that is in the water that's killing everybody and now it's going to attack humans. But then again, later in the film, it turns out to be, later in the film, you think maybe it's just mental illness. And then the fourth thing is that we find out what it actually is.
Yeah, and you know, I think Abe made this point, and I thought it was a really good point. One of the things that I really did appreciate in this film was the aspect of mental illness that was truly something being dealt with in real life by these characters. That there were hints that there were mental issues involved, and that certainly led me, especially when it comes to the hallucination sequences, in that direction. Which kudos for that for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because again, we don't really know the backstories of all the characters that well when the movie begins, and we never really do, except from a couple of comments here and there. But Tom, the patriarch of the family, it's alluded to that he's been drinking a lot recently,
big lapses.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we don't know if he was always like that or if it's just been recent. I never really explained it. And then Harry has always been known to be the son to get angry a lot because
he's very abrasive, hot tempered.
Yeah, because like when his mother passed away from lung cancer, from smoking and drinking and all that other stuff, he was trying to blame the hospital.
He wanted to sue the hospital.
Sue them and stuff, yeah. So again, we're only hearing the story through one character's eyes, so it could be much different than how she's talking about it, or the two sisters, Audrey and Jen. But generally, it's meant to make us think that, yeah, there could be some behavioral health issues that run through the family. And the two daughters are basically trying to run away from basically the mother, who's now passed, the father, and the brother.
And Phil, we I think we've talked about this before in earlier podcasts, that I think really truly good horror does involve tapping into reality, tapping into real life problems, and the disassociation of this family was really prevalent and really integral to the story, I thought.
Yeah, and they mention it too, just in some of their discussions when they talk, right? I mean, he says, we'll see you during the next funeral, you know, meaning
right,
you,
exactly,
you never show up.
Right,
yeah. So
And you do see that in families, and, you know, most of us have lost at least one parent at some point, some more recently than others. And, you know, but when I've seen it in people where they have one child is the one who stays behind to take care of the adult, and the other siblings are not there, and they don't see how the parent or, you know, the father or the mother has changed with age, that they're suffering from dementia. They don't necessarily understand how bad it gets. And there's sometimes resentment that the child who stayed behind to take care of them, you know, had to deal with this burden, had to deal with this responsibility.
Which was a great aspect of this film.
To deal with everyone bitching and complaining when things don't work out well.
Right. Well, and also too, when these outlanders, or outsiders if you prefer, because even though they were born and raised on the island, they're gone now and they don't come back much, try to comment. Even if Harry is a little hot-tempered or whatnot, you know, his father is his best friend. And and he gets defensive when they attack the father or they attack his relationship with the father. He goes, you know, because he's been living with the father. He's good friends with the father, never mind, loves his father. And then you have these two siblings, sisters, that just come back and try to say stuff. And it's like, who are you? You have nothing to say. You don't have any right to discuss what's going on. You haven't even been here. I've seen it all. So what are you talking about? So I actually kind of was on his side the whole time. And since the movie is out of his perspective and we know something else is going on besides him besides mental illness, it made me feel a lot more for his character than any of the other characters in the film. At least,
and I think it also provided a good subterfuge. I mean, the concept that this is something you don't want to talk about, this is something you don't want to deal with, and this is, you know, he's fine, which was the theme that ran through a good chunk of the film, right? Very close to the end. It was about Tom first. He's fine. I'm telling you, he's fine. And then it's Harry. He's fine. He's just got, you know, this. He just drinks a little too much.
And what really works with this, to add that parallel to real mental horror is how certain diseases can be hereditary. And in this case here, if we take out the supernatural elements and stuff like that, and just make this focus as a human drama, it could be just a son catching a disease that his father was afflicted with and is now terrified of losing himself as well.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I like that point, but I still think that may have been a red herring, because the question is, before the craziness begins, was the father or were Harry that really dissocial with
everybody around? I agree with that. I'm just saying, in terms of how we can look at it from a different sort of theme and stuff, certain things to explore. Sure.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what Dan was mentioning too, where, a lot of these films, whether they're horror or not, the human dynamic of family drama without going into true melodrama, it makes the films more interesting and also brings in quote unquote real life horror rather than the supernatural or even, if it was a serial killer.
We get those scenes where, he's going to the doctors and he's they're giving him these tests, but he doesn't want to confront the idea that he might have an issue. And the rest of the family and people around him don't know how to deal with it either.
And now, just because you happened to mention the MRI sequence, that was one of the ones that I kind of had an issue with, just thematically and logically. So he goes through this MRI and sees these images, whether it's hallucination or whatever, but there's no indication, there's no follow through on what happened with the MRI, what did the MRI show. And I just missed that little extra loop. Even if it had been, there's nothing wrong with you. The MRI is fine.
I felt like he didn't finish it.
Yeah, well, he didn't. But even so, they would have gotten an MRI image. He ran through it a few times. So I'm having had a few.
Yeah, I just had one myself.
So you know what I mean. They had, whether it was a full image or a partial image, then even it's, we didn't finish the test because you freaked out and we weren't able to do it. And maybe we'll give you maybe we'll sedate you and try again. No, I don't want that, and run away. Whatever.
That's exactly what happened to me recently.
See?
They had to sedate me.
Just close that logically. There were a few of those in the film that bothered me, but we'll talk about them when we get to them. Anyway, go on.
Barrett, you just wanted some good drugs.
Well, yeah, that's true too. But I needed it. I freaked out when they tried to put me in that tube.
Yeah, a lot of
people. And it was a lot smaller than what he went into. Let me tell you.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that's a fair point, Dan. I didn't even think of that. I just figured they didn't mention it again because it came back clear. But you're right. Maybe they should have just had a line in there where they said he gets a phone call. Or his sister says, "Yeah, I was talking to a doctor, and they said there was no problems."
There's a few of those that, as I said, I found some of the logic missing, and some of the character choices bothered me, and some of the, and we'll get into some other stuff. But yes, go on. I'm stepping back.
Sure. So basically, what happens is Audrey comes over with her daughter and. Her assistant, and basically what happens is she stays with her father and brother, and every night the father takes off and disappears, and then one night he takes off and he disappears for good. He's on his boat and the boat doesn't come back, and so there's a panic of what happened to him, where is he, did his boat break down, and then he's just floating in the middle of the bay or the sound or whatever, and they just have to start doing a search, and eventually they find a boat but no body, and the boat is similar to the first scene of the movie, which is the pre-credit scene where we see the father wake up, the boat's all screwed up, and there's a dog on the leash, and whatnot. So it appears that this has happened a few times, but this time the father is not on the boat. So the police and Coast Guard think he's overboard and he must have drowned. And that's what Audrey believes too, but Harry doesn't believe it because Harry, even though they say, you know, he could have been drunk, he's been acting weird recently. Harry's unconvinced because he's been a fisherman for, you know, 40 years or whatever. He's good at his job. He's a good boatsman or whatever.
He's upset about the disarray on the boat, that it was ransacked, and he thinks that Aunt was attacked by somebody.
One of the oars is broken even. He said, you know how much force it would take to break one of these?
Right. Yeah, so technically, he seems right, even though everybody doesn't believe him, and it makes him even more angry.
I understand.
Pirates. It could have been punks, you know. That.
I don't know how many pirates you get off of Rhode Island.
Anthony
Thurber's out there on the high.
Pirates doesn't mean Jack Black or whatever, Jack Sparrow. Pirates means just punks that rip off small boats, yachts, and stuff like that.
But the fact that, you know, you had the broken oar, I'm just saying, I think they could have been a little bit more, the cops could have been a little bit more curious.
You would think.
I would have thought. Like I said, I get the whole thing. He's old. He hasn't been entirely in his right mind of late.
He drinks.
Mm-hmm. He's in a horror movie. These things happen. But, you know, it just seemed like there was enough there that I would want to ask more questions. But these are cops in a horror movie, and they did their job, which was not to ask questions.
Well, and they don't seem to have a whole lot of love for that guy himself. Not the guy that died, but
yeah,
his son. So, I don't know, maybe they're just prone to not care at that point.
Yeah, it seems like he's probably spent a night or two in their lockup before this.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, there's two cops. There's the head cop and the assistant. The assistant definitely doesn't like, doesn't like their family, and the head cop is more sympathetic. But he's still like, well, I don't know what to tell you, but I think he's went overboard. So he's still convinced or doesn't want to do the investigation. And also, he said we turned it over to the Coast Guard anyway. You know,
because it was at sea, right? So it would be a Coast Guard thing, wouldn't it?
Right, yeah, I guess. But Harry's still pissed because he's mentioning everything that Mike said, you know, besides the fact that they're in a horror film. But everything else he says, you know, this doesn't look like someone that just fell overboard. This looks like someone was attacked, a ransacking.
Right. And it's not like he goes to, like, it was a shark. Or it was Cthulhu, or it was brain parasites. You know, he just went with,
it was,
you know,
a Kraken.
Yeah, you know, he just went to pretty much normal, to a normal thing. Which, hey, this looks fucking suspicious.
Right. Yeah. So he was not out of line by saying this looks more suspicious than someone that just fell overboard.
Totally agree. Not out of line at all.
Yeah. Right. And again, I was sympathizing with him the entire time. I was like, again, we know this is a horror film and we know there's something going on besides a guy that's fallen overboard, but everything he points out is right on the money, which is what I would say if it was my father, you know? And so I was like curious how much Audrey was like, well, the cops are probably right. And I was like, I don't know. She seems like a dink. I didn't like her at all.
Well, it's just someone who's not spending all this time with the father, so she's got preconceived notions of his issues.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's closed-mindedness because the preconceived notions are more powerful than common logic of being unbiased and looking at the boat and saying this doesn't look like someone that just fell overboard.
Yep.
But she's reasoning it in her head that he must have been drunk and he destroyed the boat and had superpower strength that he would crack open a oar, and then he fell overboard drunk or something. I don't know. But either way, they find his body a few days later, and they say he most likely drowned.
Yeah, and the condition of the body, though, as some points out, looks really like off. Like there's serious trauma to the skull.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is that the coroner, a pathologist, or whatever you want to call him, was legit, because he says, we'll never know. You know, it could be what you said, but more apt, it was a body that was overboard, that when it hit the
rocks,
the waves in the Sound, you know, those waves get pretty rough, you know, because if you fall off a rock in New England into the ocean, you're going to get swept away, because it's not a sandy beach. And so
and those are rocky waters out there.
Yeah. Right?
So the whole idea that, well, his face could have been banging up against the rocks, you know, that's not far fetched. And unlike the cops, you know, although I understand the cops' point of view, it's been, what is it, 3 days?
Yes.
So I can understand the coroner's point of view that, at this point, we're never going to know, because there's just too much damage, too much time has passed, and this is consistent with any number of things. So, right. Yeah, I think that was, fairly reasonable. Still, I think it would bear some investigating.
Right, right. You think that they could take the boat and do fingerprints and all this other stuff on it. I know that costs money, but I mean,
and honestly, from the point of view of the film, right, they could have had them do that. They could have had them search for fingerprints, and really, fingerprints just takes time, more than anything, you know, just trying to find a print. And you could point out, you know, that the boat is out on the water, you know, you don't know how well. I have no idea. I have no idea how well the fingerprints are going to hold up if there's a lot of spray. You know, but they can get some prints, they get no matches, and that adds to the mystery, right? Or at least they could confirm that he was alone when he died, that it wasn't any kind of foul play. And I think that furthers the story. I don't think that's a problem.
Sure. Yeah, but they didn't go that route. But this is when we're introduced to Jen, who's the other sister. She lives out in New York or New Jersey or something like that. And basically, she's back for the funeral. There's a scene after the funeral where everybody goes and socializes, because that's one of those weird things that people do after funerals. And one of the locals says that he thinks the son killed the father because he wanted to inherit the house.
Oh, yeah.
Needed to get beat.
Yeah,
yeah, the house is worth $2 million just for the fact that it's on a block island and on the water.
Well, you know.
It's an ass kicking.
Yeah, but I think I've also been involved in those family type of things, too, so.
Well, this is one of the ones that I wanted to discuss. I'm glad we're here now. Two things. One, I believe that at this point, Harry has already gone scuba diving and has already been infected.
Oh, right. That's a good point.
Right?
And he's also, I believe, at this point, it's already happened in the chronology of the film. I think he's already had that. I don't know if it was a full hallucination dream sequence. This is one of the issues that these two issues were really bothered me. One is he had this sequence. How much of it was a dream or hallucination, I don't know. And that was but he goes and he's on the computer and he looks up all the, he's doing some very logical things. He looks up all of the, because his conspiracy friend has convinced him that there's something weird going on in the water. And so he goes to all these sites online and he gets all of the dates and places where these birds and fish have been dying in massive numbers. And he takes a Sharpie and he draws a line and a date for each one of these incidents on this giant map he's got on the wall. And he draws this line out to it, to bring the line all the way to the Block Island Sound and currently. So he follows this pattern like it's following a water pattern, like it's following maybe the thermals of the coast, and he marks it on the map, and then he has this thing where he vomits up these worms.
Right.
Am I right? Chronologically speaking, yeah. Does this happen before the funeral?
Because the reason he's scuba diving is he's looking for his father's body where they found the boat.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's this weird sequence during that, which is kind of misleads people to thinking it's one thing because he's scuba diving, looking down the bottom of the ocean, and there's like some black ink or something like that. He turns and then he finds himself back on the boat.
Right, which you know, there it makes it think like the way I was thinking, which is some kind of a parasitic thing that lives in the ocean, that infects you, with this massive black cloud that came upon him, and I evidently meant as a red herring because it certainly fooled me, and frustrated me a little.
When did the scene with the deer come? Did this happen already?
Oh no, that's later.
That's later.
Yeah. So it's very clear at this point that he's been infected with whatever it is that Tom had, and he goes to the funeral. So now, okay, so two things. One, the map that he drew, was that entire thing a dream or hallucination? Did he never draw the map? Because if he did draw the map and that was a part of a reality before the hallucination, then later on you see the map and there's no markings on it. That bothered me.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And then at the funeral, did that man really say something to him, or was that part of hallucination?
No, that was real because there was a whole fight and everything like that. And
then he was in the tent.
Well, he might have started the fight, but he was from the hallucination.
So I needed clarification. I mean, nobody else heard this. The guy says it really loudly in this huge room full of people. He says this shitty thing, and then they don't, and then they only attack Harry, and they only lock Harry up, but they don't do anything to this guy who really started the fight. Or,
well, I think you are number one. I mean, you can say something loudly in a crowded room, and if you're involved in conversations, as often people are in a funeral, people might not notice. Even if you do say something, they are sometimes more likely to respond to the thing that the response, right? Because there's something that happens and then you focus your attention on it. You may not completely.
I get it.
Process.
It's in like in football when the flag gets thrown on the guy who responds to the punch that was thrown first.
True. All right. So we all believe that was a real thing that happened, right?
Well, I'm willing to concede that it might not be.
Right. Yeah, me too.
But again, I'm not the one who's paying the closest attention. But the reason I'm willing to say that is because, you know, he is our mostly our point of view character. And while it's not something like, you know, say Black Swan, which is literally from that character's point of view, we are kind of seeing things through his perspective, and we know he is not a reliable narrator.
Exactly
right. So I would not – let me put it this way. I suspect that what happened, but I would not say that anyone, you know, is wrong for thinking that maybe it didn't.
Fair enough.
And
I think that uncertainty is fine because that puts us where the character is.
Yeah.
Who's confused. And,
yeah, there's one moment before the fight in which he's in his grocery store trying to pick up food for the funeral and stuff like that, and he orders some slices for sandwiches and stuff like that, and then suddenly he sees his father, and then he suddenly starts grabbing an entire cart full of things, just everything he gets his hands on, and he starts heading out the door, despite one of the clerks trying to stop him. And then he suddenly realizes what he's doing, and he hurries out. He doesn't know why he was doing it. But he just done it, and it freaks him out. And that's what right into that very moment where the guy says something shitty to him, and we get into the fight.
Exactly.
That's a fair point, Abe. I thought it happened, the fight, and he actually, I mean, he heard the man actually say that terrible thing. But Mike and Dan have a good point, which is, yeah, since he's an unreliable narrator, especially, as you just mentioned, Abe, the scene right before where he was sent by Audrey to go and get food platters, and he goes basically insane in the grocery store, that, and then it leads right to the fight. You could argue that, yeah, maybe yeah, I mean, and even before the grocery store scene, he's out in the back deck of the restaurant smoking a cigarette, and the conspiracy theorist guy comes over and he starts talking about how, who are all these people? I don't even know who they are. Why are they here? It's not their father, you know? And you know, he's already like talking as if a funeral isn't just for him, but it's also for people to give respect to him and as well as his father. And he's already like lost, where it's like funerals are stupid. And so, yeah, his mind definitely isn't right.
And I think another thing that we probably should mention, since all spoilers have been given now, and clearly we're way beyond that, is that he keeps seeing his father. This bizarre zombified version of his father.
Asking him for things.
And telling him to do things, or just standing, making that sound.
Basically the father is like an apparition, and he just makes this moan every time, and eventually that moan turns into a word near the end of the film, and it was a pretty cool reveal.
I think they were all words, Phil. It was just the last one was more understandable.
Yeah.
Well, the last two, I think, deer and dog.
Deer and girl. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, well, because I think they're trying... They want to make it clear to the audience, right? That's why it's more intelligible.
Yes,
I agree. And because they want you to kind of have your butt cheeks clench when he says "girl."
Yes, which they did. It was like that. That was like an excellent horror moment for sure.
And maybe they're getting more control of them as they're learning, and so he's a better meat puppet.
And there's one thing too, is that it sounds very much like the sound that kind of drones. Kind of gurgling sound that starts to emanate from the father too. It's kind of almost like there's water in the lung kind of sound.
Right. And we should have probably also mentioned that on the boat, whenever it's in this area where the father always went, and now Harry's going to where he went scuba diving, that whenever they go there, all of the electronics on the boat, the radio is just this weird static and making that kind of growling sound as well. And early on, we've noticed that there are problems with electronics when the father was around initially, and now when Harry's around.
Yes, exactly. So that's the thing, is like the groan comes from through the CB radio on the boat and stuff like that, and they don't play it up as much as say a movie like Signs does, but it's kind of like that, and so. Unlike Signs, no one knows they're in a horror movie in this one, while in Signs everybody knew they were in a horror movie, so they were watching for these quote unquote signs. Here, when things like that happen, people just, you know, ignore it, except for Harry, because Harry's the one that is the closest to his father, and he knows that something odd is going on. And then eventually he himself, as you mentioned, Dan, gets, I guess, the quote unquote disease as well, and it's now affecting him firsthand, and no one's understanding that it's that he's now infected. They just think he's going crazy. You know, it's almost like when you know people who get any mental illness, people like, for example, Rita Hayworth, when she started getting Alzheimer's, people thought she was just going schizophrenic. And then eventually everybody figured out, you know, 20 years later that, oh, that was Alzheimer's, because it hadn't been diagnosed as a main well-known disease yet. So here everybody's just assuming that he's going crazy because that is the most logical thing. And yet it's really something else that's going on.
Although I think with Harry, most people were thinking he was just drunk rather than going crazy. At least that's the impression I got. You, right, how much right. did you well, drink? Yeah. You're blacking out. And then they black out. One of the things with Tom and that you learned and with Harry is that they have these episodes and they don't remember much because they completely black out. And so people were telling Harry or Audrey specifically, and I think a couple others, the police chief, were, you know, were you drinking? How much did you have to drink? So.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. And in reality, it's more than that. It's actually, you know, the big twist in the film that we haven't actually brought up yet.
Well, I think with the whole, you know, at first, certainly they don't think he's crazy. They think he's drunk, but
right.
then, you know, they start becoming legitimately worried because, you know, things like this does run in families. And so that's why they do the MRI later on, is right. They do start suspecting eventually that he may be having some mental difficulties.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Well, I think doesn't that happen after he kind of confesses to Audrey that something's wrong with him, that he's blacking out? That's right. That's the MRI yeah. thing comes after that, right? He says after the funeral episode, and I think after the deer episode, I'm pretty sure, which we haven't talked about. He then says to Audrey, something's wrong with me. Something was wrong with Dad. I didn't want to tell you because, you know, I thought it was things, but I got to tell you, something was wrong with Dad. Now I think something's wrong with me.
Yeah. Now, Eric, what do you talk about the little tale that Audrey talks to her daughter about? Because that plays an important role later in the film anyway.
Take it away, dude. I watched this a month ago. I don't remember.
Oh, all right. Barry, you like that too. So why don't you talk about it? Fair?
You're talking about the story with the how she's catching fish?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she tells her daughter a story because her daughter's worried about fish dying. And she, you know, pulls fish out of the water to take a look at them, I guess, and study them. And she said, we take some of them out and some of them die. And we put most of them back and they live. So it's okay. Basically, she's trying to make her daughter feel better about the death of the fish.
Yeah, they yeah. live, and they're all out of bubble gum.
And
she bullshits her with, and some brave little fish. They like they volunteered to jump
yeah.
in. That.
Yeah, jeez.
They want to do this for us.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, she's a scientist. Probably a marine biologist or EPA, so who knows, it could be anything. But either way, she obviously has to take live samples in nature, and some of those live samples they kill. And she basically tries to tell her daughter that for those handful that die, it allows us to understand the rest of them so we can help protect the rest of them going forward. And logically speaking, I guess it makes sense, but for true environmentalists like the kooks and young children, it doesn't make sense because it's like, yeah, but you're still, you know, it's like war, you know, you have to fight, you don't kill anybody, but we have to go to war and you kill people. So it doesn't make sense. So it's a kind of illogical for the daughter, and the mother's just trying to explain that, you know, this is why we do it. You know, we
do how do you help them by killing them? Right. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I don't want to jump to the end of the film yet, because I think there's more we should talk about before we get there. Sure. But when we get to the end of the film, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah, we will. All right. So let's talk about, the deer scene, I guess. Dan, you said you had some things you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, the deer scene. This I had no problem with. This I thought was terrific. And I thought it was, for me, this progression of seeing Tom appear and clearly Harry's infected, however he's infected, which we haven't gotten to yet, other than this black ink that covered him and obviously made him like Tom. He's now seeing Tom everywhere, and Tom's groaning, and now he's driving along, and there's a deer in the road, and he sees the deer, and he stops. You know, he doesn't want to hurt the deer, and then all of a sudden, Tom's there again, going, deer. And that, I thought that was a terrifying moment. I loved that moment. I thought that was fantastic. And then then Harry just hits the full speed and slams into the deer. And the next thing we know, he's out on the boat, heading out towards on the Block Island side, heading out towards the spot with the dead deer in the back of the boat.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, it cuts. So, you know, we don't know what happens, but we just know that.
Well, we have a good sense since we saw the collar of the dog first.
We figure he dumps it overboard, but we still don't know why he decides to bring it out to the middle of the Block Island Sound.
Because they want to study it.
right. Yeah, because I doubt he's bringing it as an offering.
Don't even talk about that. Yeah. I'm going to get there.
The deer volunteered.
It's a brave deer.
It's a brave little deer. And then, of course, it happens with it. And then, you know, a very short while later, he's out staring at the house. He's staring at the dog. And there comes Tom. Dog. Dog.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Clearly they don't understand property rights either, because not your dog.
Right.
Neighbor
dog.
But
when they had gone to Providence for the MRI, and when they were in Providence, and I guess they found nothing wrong, the doctor did say a couple of interesting things, which is to at least Audrey, that it appears that it could be people that have problems with electronics. I forget what that's called, the disease.
Oh, yes, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'd forgotten about the other doctor, yeah.
Yeah, that was the hypersensitivity.
You're right.
Electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And they believe
anybody seen Better Call Saul last season?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Head show rules.
But Block Island Wind Farm, they think may be the issue, and they show the windmills in the middle of the sound a couple of times in the film, and so they're thinking that maybe he has an issue with electromagnetic things, you know, sort of power lines, cell phone towers, the windmills, because even though they're quote unquote windmills, they're actually generally run by electricity and various other things, and all this other stuff. And they say maybe that's what it is. I mean, because physiologically, he seems fine.
And the doctor mentions she had another a friend, a patient who had this same problem and had to give up all electronics, couldn't have anything, not cell phones, nothing, no electronics anywhere near him, and had to move out to the middle of nowhere, has no phone, etc.
It gave up his job as a park ranger. It was terrible.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, right, there you go. So Greenwich, Rhode Island, which is like the middle of the state of Rhode Island, in Dan mentioned, the rural area. And earlier, it was kind of funny, I think it was Jen, the other sister, that said, or I can't even remember who it was, but someone said that they should take him to Madison, which is Madison, Connecticut.
Yeah, I think it was Jen, I think, said.
Yeah, because there's a mental institution there for wealthy people, and there's like three of them, and the town is filthy rich. But either way, those mental institutions do exist, because I looked it up, because I was shocked, because they go, mental institutions in Madison, Connecticut? I can't believe that. It's like multimillionaires, and sure enough, they're there. And
You think rich people don't have mental problems?
Everybody knows if you're rich, you have no problems. Everybody knows that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, We want those buildings in the cities. We don't want them in our town. You know, that type of crap. Similar to the wind farm. I remember when Nantucket was going to get them, and Walter Cronkite was complaining about it, because he didn't want windmills out in the – it would ruin his view. You know, so fuck
yes. Say, Eric, you have to remember that if you show up to McDonald's in, you know, a tuxedo jacket and a shirt and tie and no pants, you're crazy.
What makes you think I don't?
If a rich person shows up, then they're a trendsetter. That's the difference.
And eccentric.
And eccentric.
That's right. Yes. Eccentric. Yes. So, yeah. So she asked for the guy's phone number so she could talk to him. The guy that moved out into the middle of nowhere to get away from electromagnetic equipment and stuff. But he doesn't have a cell phone or a regular phone for that matter because of that reason. So the doctor at least gives the address. And she puts that away. And that's, I guess, a Chekhov's address for later in the film.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah. So we know there's something fishy going on, but the dog incident
Fishy.
Oh, there you go. But the dog incident, when he takes the neighbor's dog, that is the first point we know there's something supernatural going on. I mean, really.
Yeah, supernatural. We always knew something supernatural.
It's the first concrete evidence we have.
Yeah, unless he's just imagining it because he's a kook. But
you mean when everything starts shooting up in the air? Is that what you're referencing on the
bus? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
Well, yeah. Although again, he's alone, so how much of that was he hallucinating? Because he could have been hallucinating his father, right? If we're going to go run with this whole unreliable narrator thing, we can't pick and choose. And not when he's all by himself.
Right. There's nobody else to witness it.
Yeah, so what happens is he steals the dog because the father apparition appears again and says, dog. So he takes the dog, brings it out into the sound where the father originally had disappeared. And what happens is everything on the boat magnetically gets pulled up into the sky, including non-magnetic items such as humans and dogs. And fish. Yeah. Everything in the water comes up. Everything on the boat comes up, which includes the dog as well as Harry himself. And so we're now saying, okay, there's something more here than bacteria, and there's something more than mental illness. Unless, as you said, Mike, the movie's still tricking us, making us think he's going insane, and this is just unreliable. At least that's what some people could think. But what did you guys think? Did you think this was at this point was still him being unreliable, or did you think, okay, this is actually happening?
No, I thought it was happening.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think as unreliable narrators go, this was not terribly convincing as an unreliable narrator, because I never really doubted that it was happening. And you know, I hope that's no offense to anybody who made the film.
No, I don't think so.
The red herrings were kind of more of a pale pink.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they were trying to go make us. Well, maybe they were, but yeah, that's a fair point, Mike. But yeah, I don't think it's insulting at all to think otherwise, because you know, I mean, there's no reason not to think. There's as much reason to believe that everything he says and sees is true as there is to think that he's an unreliable narrator because it's a horror film.
Right. A fair point. But why? All right. So now we know things are going up into the sky.
Right.
Including Harry and the dog.
Right.
So why is the black ink in the water?
I'm thinking that that's a really good question, actually.
And that may have been my number one logical issue.
They use the black ink in the anal probes. Back out when they fall down.
That's it. Of course, it's a black anal probe ink.
Well, actually, you know what? Maybe if I'm trying to figure it out. At that point, they took away their host human being, which was Tom, because they decided that the Greys basically took him up into the spaceship. And so now he's gone. And then they threw him back, and then unfortunately he's dead. So they needed someone else. So when Harry shows up to that location trying to search for his father's body, excuse me, I'm going to have a coffee vent.
That's what mute buttons are for, Phil. which I'm presuming he's doing. So I'll pick up where Phil was talking.
Yeah, please do.
He's drawn up into the air. So this was kind of my issue is if they can suck somebody up into the air, then why wait for them to go in the water to get hit with black ink? Why not just suck them up into the air and do whatever they're doing up in their ship?
That's actually a good point. Because also, how are they going to know that someone was going to go scuba diving?
Well, maybe they have a little research station at the bottom of the ocean and a spaceship up in the air.
Okay. All right. You know I got that. All right.
You have a valid point there, but I would say if I had to hazard a guess as to alien reasoning, that they want them to come out on the boat because it's less conspicuous to abduct somebody off the boat in the middle of the ocean where nobody else is around and they're trying not to attract attention.
I have certainly no problem with that in the middle of the ocean where nobody's around is a less conspicuous area. But again, I don't understand why the thing in the water, other than as a red herring.
Right.
No,
that's a fair point.
That's true.
Because you can say the middle of the sound.
Like you did.
The middle of the sound where a little boat is as rural as you can get. So technically, they could have just beamed them up and they didn't need to attack them from the water. So that's a fair point.
And obviously, clearly, the reason is because they didn't want us, they wanted to save that for the surprise. And I understand that. I don't know. It bothered me.
Well, it is bizarre. I mean, let's be honest, their thinking is kind of alien, but you know, that gets them credit in my point, you know, is that it's an easy excuse. Well, they're alien. We don't have to explain why they do weird shit because they're alien.
They're in cahoots with the mermaids. That's why they're saying.
Abe has it. It's mermaids. There were mermaids all along and I knew it. I just missed it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a interesting point. But yeah, either way, at this point we figure out that's it, the moment I texted both Eric and Barrett saying it's the Greys. So I was happy.
I think at that point everyone knows it's the Greys.
Yeah. I mean, we unfortunately didn't get to see them, but still it was awesome. So yeah, what other things do we want to talk about before we get to the Ranger, meaning the guy.
I think that's the next logical step, isn't it?
Phil, your inability to call him by his given name just will never cease me to crack me up. No, he texted me while he was watching too, and he didn't use his right name there too. He was like, "Holy shit, you're right! It's the Ranger."
Well, he answered. I mean, when we were hanging out with him, I just kept calling, "Hey, Ranger," and he would answer.
So. Yeah, I know. I was there.
It was kind of cool. It's kind of funny.
Before you get to the Ranger, I think you have to talk about my other logic issue, which was Audrey bringing her daughter back into Harry's home when Harry has been behaving the way he's been behaving. And leaving her with his associate.
Yeah.
Why didn't she just leave her daughter on the mainland with a friend? Why bring her there? Especially after Grandpa allegedly did something weird to her.
Right. Well,
I think he was trying to drag her off to the boat.
I totally agree. 100% agree. Somebody was saying to him, "Girl."
Exactly. I would stand to reason that family, even though family can be assholes, they're still family, and it's often really difficult to comprehend that somebody that's your family would harm another member of your family or your child or whatnot.
Fair enough.
You need to watch more daytime TV.
Actually. I want to use an analogy, and I've used it in the past. Dan, did you ever see the movie Take Shelter?
Yes.
Yes. There's a scene where Michael Shannon and his wife and kid are in the tornado shelter.
Right.
And he's freaking out, and she's trying to say there's nothing up there. And he's almost acting as if he's going to get violent. Mm-hmm. And my wife was like freaking out when she's watching the film, saying, oh my God, this guy's dangerous. And I go, yeah, but you got to look at it at her perspective, the wife's perspective, which is he's not violent ever to her or the daughter. She knows that he may be mentally ill a little bit and he's having trouble. So if that was me and I was freaking out, would you think I was dangerous? And she says, no. And I go, that's my point. And she goes, okay, I see what you're saying.
I see that point.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. But you're right though, Dan, that if she wanted to be a little more safe, she still could have had her daughter stay with the assistant, because technically could just gone back to the inn that he was staying before, right?
Right, instead of in the house with Harry.
From an outsider's perspective, you're absolutely right, but she doesn't have an outsider's perspective.
And which I think is what Phil was saying, with his analogy. Yeah. Except for the fact that she was saying, you know what, you're right, because I'm going to change my opinion on this because you've convinced me. Because she does say, if I remember correctly, she does say he's never been violent, she's going to be fine, but just in case, stay with her, but, you know, he's going to be fine. She does say
She has that big argument earlier with her assistant, where the assistant's saying, yeah, he's crazy, he could be dangerous, don't you? And she gets offended, saying,
yeah,
no. So... she absolutely.
It's my brother. He's never going to hurt my daughter.
Right. Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. I'm with you. I changed my opinion.
Fair enough. But it is a good point, because outsiders who were watching this, we would go, an outsider example would be children services, where they would see something like this and they would have send people in, even though for people who are inside the whole situation don't see it as an issue at all. So for the assistant, he's just seeing this crazy guy while the sister isn't. So yeah, it is fair that anybody who's watches this film would feel more like the assistant than the Audrey, I guess. The sister.
Valid points.
Yeah. All right. So where do we want to go now? Because I know there's two big scenes that happen simultaneously, which is, I'll say it correctly this time, Eric. Jeremy Holmes scene.
Oh, you mean Ranger? And
the Ranger, yeah, the Ranger scene. And simultaneously is the scene where the assistant Harry and his niece are supposed to watch like Dumbo or something.
I think you need to start there and then move on to the Ranger.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. So he's already there. They're trying to put in a video, some like Disney film or something. And he sees the father, and the father says girl. And that's, in my opinion, Mike, that freaked me out, because it's like, holy shit, they want to kidnap the girl. And at this point,
very creepy girl.
Right. And we already know the Greys exist in this movie, and we know that he's being possessed by the Greys. So it's like, oh my God, this guy, I like this guy, he's a good guy, but is he going to lose to the Greys and kidnap the girl?
Is he going to murder a child? And now I'm fully on board.
Is he going to murder his niece?
Yes. Right. So, he wants to leave the room, and as they're trying to work the VCR, not the VCR, Jesus, I'm aging myself, the DVD or Blu-ray player, it starts going crazy. And
so that way they don't have to pay any copyright.
So, you know, obviously for us, we know it's the Greys at this point, while Emily and the assistant, they're just thinking something's fishy with the machine.
I don't understand. It's a brand new machine. And the disc isn't scratched.
Yeah, that's right. He does say that. Yeah. And they try to, you know, Emily's trying, I think her name's Emily, keeps on saying, oh, yeah, come on, Uncle Harry, don't leave. We want you to watch it with us. But eventually he just bails, because, you know, the aliens are trying to tell him to kidnap his niece. And this is where he almost runs over a jogger, another girl, because he is going to probably try to kidnap that girl. I
love that scene.
But, yeah. So, yeah, that's what happened. Right, yeah, he left and he ran and he got in the car and tried to drive away. And then he sees the jogger, the female jogger, and Tom shows up again. Girl.
So apparently the aliens aren't picky. They just want a girl. It doesn't matter which girl.
And it was interesting, too, at that point, if I recall, Harry doesn't speak again for the rest of the film. He's completely, like, almost robotic.
Yes, I think that's correct. I believe that is 100% correct, Abe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really eerie because you completely see him just deteriorate to the very point he's actually just almost like an ant drone just carrying out an order.
Yeah, it's true. And it's almost like he's going to be maybe taken by the Greys himself. I don't know. But yeah, so he fights off the Greys, crashes the car intentionally so he doesn't run over the girl. And then the girl comes over to see if he's okay, and the aliens take him over again, and he tries to kidnap the girl again. But at that point, he's already wounded from banging his head, probably a concussion. So at that point, he starts walking back to his home, and he's going to kidnap Emily at that point. Because at this point, the aliens have taken over pretty much for good. And I guess that's when we can flash forward to the Ranger scene.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Let's talk about
Jeremy Hunt, right?
Yeah, Jeremy Hunt. Who's from Vermont, by the way. Actually, he lives in Vermont now. He's originally from New York, I think. Or Jersey or something. No, I think he was from upstate New York.
And you should obsess some more about geography.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Either way, he lives in Vermont. Oh, that's all that matters. So it was an easy ride for him to do Block Island. All right, so what do we want to talk about this scene here?
Well, Audrey decides to leave Emily, as we know, with the assistant, whatever his name is. I can never remember the character's name. And she drives off to, you said Greenwich? Don't you guys pronounce it Greenwich?
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably Greenwich, but it's Greenwich, Rhode Island, which is central west part of the state of Rhode Island.
Yeah, and so very rural, evidently, and away from electronics.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. At least where this guy lives, yeah. It's West Greenwich, I think, is where she goes.
And her assistant has said something to her about, like, this guy could be crazy. Or why do you want to go? Let me go. I'll go. And she says, no, I have to do it.
Right, right. Yeah, so there's 6,000 people in the town. So it's a very small town. Very small. So she
drives out to this trailer in the middle of nowhere.
Right. And you know what's interesting is she also has to leave Block Island, and the only way to get back to Block Island is ferry. So this is going to be a long trip for her, even if West Greenwich is really not that far if there was a land bridge. But unfortunately, it takes like an hour or two to get on, use the ferry. So yeah. So she meets this guy. He's out in a trailer.
A camper or something, yeah.
RV,
yeah.
And immediately he's like, yeah, is that a cell phone on you? And he forces her to put, like, the cell phone and something else, some other thing,
watch.
Too. That she, a watch, that's what it was.
And he had a line in there that I thought was great. It's like bringing, what did he say, a grenade into a, what was the line? Because I just thought it was...
Yeah. Bring a grenade to a house or something like that? Yeah,
it was something like that, but I thought it was a great line.
Yeah. So, Abe, explain this scene first.
So, basically, she goes to visit this fella because she wants more information. Because she heard from the doctors that this guy was suffering from something very similar to what her brother's dealing with. Before she's allowed in, she has to get rid of any electronics because, you know, he's paranoid. He thinks so. There's a reason for it. But she has to do it before she, you know, he lets her in. She does so. They go in, and as she starts asking questions about, like, you know,
you know, my brother's dealing with what you've been afflicted with. But it turns out really quickly that it wasn't anything close to it, because that was just a diagnosis. It wasn't really what the guy was actually dealing with. It isn't until she starts bringing up her brother's episodes, blackouts, and stuff like that, that the guy starts to really open up to her, and gets really serious and freaked out, because he starts telling her that basically, you know, people be under these influences are being controlled, they're being used, they start asking for the beings above, the greys, the aliens, whatever they are start demanding things from people, small things at first, until they get bigger and bigger and more serious, until people start getting hurt or getting killed. And he starts to plead to her, get your brother out. But she doesn't really completely buy any of what he's saying. She thinks he's nuts, and he turns away, and he's just calling out for her to, you know, do something before it's too late. So we get a load of that these aliens, these entities are taking people control into drone servants so they can get test subjects and stuff like that. And now Harry is their new vessel.
Yeah, and she thinks the guy's nuts.
Yeah.
And she just wasted her time, because she even calls her assistant up and saying, yeah, I just wasted my time, and I'll be back like in 2 hours because I got to wait for the ferry and all this other crap. And this is all happening. This is before Harry goes nuts and steals Emily. I guess we can get into our last scene here then. And the big scene that Barrett and you are basically it's a rush to save the Audrey's daughter. She gets there basically right on time and jumps on the boat, and the boat heads off into the sound, and she is there to calm her daughter down rather than fight off her brother. And so they lock themselves into the little
hold,
storage, hull. And that's when the aliens hit, and she now knows that her brother and her father weren't insane after all. Any viewer who's still thinking the brother's just insane now knows that he's not, too. And they all get sucked up into the outer space, except for
she holds on to some netting or something, and that keeps her from going out. But Audrey is really desperately trying. She's holding onto a lamp, a hanging hook lamp, which eventually the it bends and releases, and she goes up too.
Yeah. So Emily doesn't. She survives from getting sucked up. Everything falls back down that the aliens don't want, but both her mother and her uncle do not. And then the sheriff or Coast Guard or someone, whoever, finds Emily and all alone. And it's kind of interesting because we don't learn whether or not she tells the police what happens or not. And if she does, would they think she's insane? But then Emily's mom, Audrey, fall from the sky later in the next morning into the middle of the sound. And then we have our voiceover. But the funny thing is that I don't think that Emily's mom, Audrey, I think she's dead, because if you fall in the middle of the sound in that cold water, which is miles away from land, either whether the island or the coast, you're pretty much dead if you don't get found. Mm-hmm. So I don't think she's going to make it. But the uncle, he's gone. We don't know what happens to him. He's probably still up in outer space. But we have that thing. What is it, Abe or Barrett? The voiceover again?
Or you hear the little fish story that she gave earlier to her daughter. And so that you get the sense that this is exactly as what is happening to the humans, just what they were doing to the fish.
Yeah.
Some brave little humans.
The aliens are studying us so they can help us.
Yep.
Well, and this brings me to my last issue and question. Are the aliens using these vessels to bring them dead animals to study or to eat?
Oh, I think study.
But then why dead? Why not bring live animals?
Well, he's bringing the girl live, right?
That's true. And potentially, I guess, the dog as well. And we don't know that he killed the dog.
Right. You know what? It's very ambiguous because there's parts of the film, like when he's in the grocery store, where
it's just talking food. It's just frozen food.
Right. So yeah. It makes us think that he's bringing food to some monster in the sea.
And the same with Tom earlier. He empties out the refrigerator and takes, and so does Harry. They empty out the refrigerator. So are they bringing food? Are they drones that are feeding the aliens, or are they bringing test subjects? Also,
I think it's all test subjects.
Yeah.
They're curious about the human food, but then they're curious about the animals and the humans themselves.
And okay. I think part of him killing the deer is him kind of them not fully controlling him.
Well, plus they're not going to be able to take the deer alive, right? I mean, that's going to
It'll run. Yeah.
And here's another question. Why is it? I'm trying to find a way to express this intelligently. Is the fact that Tom eventually ends up dead on the beach, smashed up, and the fact that Harry doesn't return, does that mean that these vessels are used up? Is that what happens? Do they get to a certain point where they're no longer useful as a vessel, so they destroy them?
I'm thinking it's similar to the fish story, which is some of them they return alive while some die because they're doing experiments on them and they sacrifice their life. So the father, Tom, was sacrificed by the aliens to do their, after they were done with him, they decided to kill him and experiment with him. And then they tossed his body back. And with Audrey, they decided that they just wanted to examine her and then toss her back live. Though she's probably going to die anyway because she's in the middle of the sound and there's no way she's going to get back to land. So I think it's that. That's what I'm thinking. It's that some of them they're killing because, you know, you kill because then you can cut them open.
But are they doing it to help us?
Well, that's the story, right?
We don't know.
That's what I'm asking. That's why I had an issue with that last little voiceover was, are they saying that these aliens are studying us because they want to help us?
Well, this is what I think. I think the story was just bullshit by Audrey. They're not just killing them to help the fish. They're also killing them to understand the fish. So yeah, that's why the scientists kill animals is because they try to, you know, that's why they test chemicals on animals and all that is they're trying to find answers. And so she lies to the daughter and says it's not just
sugarcoat it.
Yeah, she's trying to sugarcoat it. Exactly. So I think the aliens are really doing what scientists do, which is they're using us as experiment subjects, and some of them they'll kill and some of them won't. And I think it's more for their understanding, their own research, not necessarily to help us. But that's my guess. But this voiceover would make you think they're doing it to help us. But again, the voiceover, if you look, take the voiceover in context, it was a sugarcoating for the daughter.
That's a good point, Phil.
It is a good point, Phil. Actually, very good point. So, in effect, Audrey becomes the unreliable narrator.
Yeah, kind of, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's the fish that's thrown back that lived.
That's right. Yeah.
And
doesn't mean she won't get experimented on in the future.
Fish piloting the spaceship. How does it feel?
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we want to discuss? Are there any scenes, specific scenes that we missed that we haven't talked about?
I just like the scene where he tells his other sister, "I'll see you at the next funeral," after he was apologizing to her, and then that's his last words.
Yeah,
to her.
That was a pretty good. Kind of funny because it came out of the scene earlier with Audrey, where she says, "Hey, you know what? Jen's your sister, and we're very, you know, we've been, you guys have always been at each other, and she's just trying to reconcile with you a little bit. Maybe, you know, try and make nice." And so on he says, "You know what? I volunteer. I'm going to drive her to her to the ferry to leave because I want to talk with her." And they're having this nice conversation in the car, very, you know, trying to just bridge, you know, bridge that gap between them until that last line, which is what made it so perfect.
Yeah,
it was a great line because at that point, again, like I said, I was on his side. I was actually on his side pretty much the whole film, and I thought that was a great shot at his sister.
Well, because she kind of ruined it at that very last statement where she's like, you know, be good to your sister.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yes. Right. And you know what's funny too is that we kind of know that Jen, that sister, was a dink anyway because when. when he gets bailed out of jail after fighting that jerk at the funeral, they said your sister's here to pick you up, and he goes, "Which sister?" And the sheriff says, "The good sister," and it's Audrey, not Jen. So we already knew that Jen was a dink or whatever word you want to.
No, I like that. Perfect word.
Yeah. So that was a great shot for him. Yeah, I liked it. Let's see. Any other scenes or anything else? General symbolism, critiques, whatever on the film. Anything? Anybody?
I don't know what the budget was on this film, but I don't think it was a huge budget. And given that, I thought they pulled off some really cool effects.
Yeah. Well, first of all, to have a dive team, you've got to have a dive team in order to shoot those underwater sequences. So that's not cheap. And then the going into the air scene, especially the one with Emily in the hole, you've got to have a green screen. So they had a green screen artist, and that's not cheap. So, and wire artists. So astounding what I presume you're correct that it wasn't a highly budgeted film, just absolutely astounding. And the DP was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a good point about all that stuff with the wires and stuff. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's not cheap.
Right.
That's not cheap. That's a team you've got to hire.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's pretty much the film. I guess we'll give our final thoughts on it in a second. But before we do, does anybody have any news or films or anything they've seen that they wanted to mention that may interest some of our listeners? Anyone want to start?
I was going to say Godzilla's rocking the box office.
True.
I watched it. It was fun.
Yeah.
Silly.
We'll be talking about that in the future.
I presumed. you guys, I posted something on the discussion page once about Sweet Home. And did you guys, my recollection?
I really want to watch it, and I'm not sure if my wife wants to watch it or not.
What's it called?
So I'm circling that. Sweet Home. It's a Korean monster TV
series. Yeah, I've been watching that.
It's absolutely, in my personal opinion, brilliant. It's brilliant. Nippy. The monsters are fantastic, and the thing I loved most about it was the heroes and villains aren't really heroes and villains, you know, a lot of gray areas in the characters. And
they're not like that, Phil.
Right, not the alien grays, right.
But
That's on Netflix, right, Abe?
It's actually based off a web comic that had finished a while ago, and it's been adapted, which is really interesting. I've watched some episodes so far. It's really solid, as Dan said. Some really cool creature effects.
And I still got to finish it, but, you know, if it holds up to the end, you know, I think I could certainly recommend it to other people and maybe even a topic.
I watched the whole first season, and it gets better and better, and it's pretty clear they're planning a second season.
I hope so. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
Before I stop talking, and I probably talked way too much, as I usually do, there's a couple of things that I wanted to mention just personally. One is an author friend of mine I want to pimp a little bit, and there's a couple of movies that I just shot even during COVID, small roles, very small roles, but they're kind of interesting. I'd love to talk about those when we have a moment.
Yeah, go right ahead, you said.
All right, I'll talk about them now. Yep. I was very fortunate to have auditioned for a couple of films before COVID struck. And when COVID started to get a little bit easier to deal with, and when there was permission given because entertainment was considered one of the viable businesses that had to keep going because we're all sitting there watching stuff in our homes, I got the opportunity to shoot two of the films that I auditioned for. One is called Whose Child, at least that's the working title. There's no release date on it yet. I have a very small role in it. I play a lawyer in a child custody case, one scene only. But the story itself is a wonderful story about just with a lot of, I don't want to call it a romantic comedy. It has rom-com aspects. It's more romantic drama, but it's about child abuse and love. It's a lovely piece based on the script. And so I'm hoping that'll come out soon, and I'll give you information when I have it. The other film I did was very interesting. Working title is First Oscar. And I played Sid Grauman of Grauman's Chinese, the guy who invented the cement handprints and footprints on Hollywood Boulevard, and the man who created the red carpet. Sid Grauman, very interesting guy. It's about the very first Oscar category for documentary films, and the first film that won that category was a Russian documentary about the horrors of the German invasion of Russia. It was a big bone of contention between David Selznick and Mayer. Selznick was his son-in-law. And Selznick saw this documentary film at a small art house and fell in love with it and said, this should be a category. And Mayer was a very anti-Bolshevik, hated the Russians, had fled the pogroms, and said, I want nothing to do with this. I refuse. And so Selznick gathered everybody else, including Sid Grauman, who was involved in the industry, and said, I want to vote on this. I want this to be a new category. And they all said, not unless Mayer agrees. So it was and then the interesting thing about this film was that it was a Russian director who spoke no English at all. So, and he had a first AD who was fluent in both Russian and English. So it was most interesting to be given directions by this guy. You know, you'd do your scene and he'd come up to you and he'd go, and you just like, and very intense, and you'd look at him and, you know, you'd be smiling and nodding. And then she'd say, he says that what you do in this scene is a good scene, but you no smiling here, save the smile for later. And then it's like a fuck you. So it was just absolutely fascinating experience. And then after I finished shooting my scenes and it was wrapped for the one day shoot, I went up to him and through his interpreter said, you know, how much I enjoyed being a part of this, how interesting it was to learn this history that I had no idea about. And he said to me, and she said, oh, he wants you to know this is a part of a bigger movie. We're going back to Russia now, and we're going to shoot the war sequences. So I don't know when that's going to be released or if it's going to be released or how, but those were both really interesting experiences.
And Dan, I got to compliment you on your Russian. It's very good.
Yeah. If you look at the translation, you'll see it's all there. It's absolutely, you know, I'm very fluent in Russian. I don't know why I even needed a translator.
Fantastic big Russian.
Thank you. Don't try this at home. I'm a professional.
I mean, it's not quite as good as David Schwimmer's German in The Diary of Anne Frankenstein.
I love David Schwimmer. So the last thing I want to do is I want to pimp a friend's book. He's a stage manager who worked with me on The Manor and on some other shows.
And he's a guy named Don Solosan, S-O-L-O-S-A-N. And he's written a couple of science fiction novels, which were pretty damn good. One called Far Gravity, which is kind of a space opera, kind of a space cowboy, space opera, kind of a novel, really solid. And the other one called Badge, which is dystopian future. He's written that as a trilogy. I've read two of the three books. They're great. But he recently wrote this other book called The Reckoning, which is available on Amazon. It's available through Goodreads. It is a maritime adventure set in the pre-Civil War era set in the Sargasso Sea with the Sargasso Sea monsters. It's fictional, obviously, but he brought in all of these real, the ship itself, the Reckoning, is a real ship. He brought in all these historical facts. He brought all these historical characters and put them all on this boat, and so, to the point where you don't know which parts are fiction and which parts are truth. And it's just a really, really good novel I recommend to anyone. Again, The Reckoning by Don Solosan.
Cool.
Nice. And all his books are available now and on Amazon?
That's correct.
Wherever books are found.
Yeah, there you go. I like it.
That's cool. All right, cool.
That's it for me.
All right, sounds good. Anybody else want to discuss anything they've seen or watched or read?
Yeah, I got a few things. First, I want to ask Dan. Dan, do you by any chance know Stephen Tobolowsky?
No, at least.
Okay, I was just curious because I've been into his. He made a movie back in 2005 called Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party. Pretty much him standing around at his birthday party telling stories. And he's a magical storyteller. And he also just, like, during his stories, drops names left and right and seems to know everybody, which is why I asked. And he also does a podcast called The Tobolowsky Files. It's not really genre, but a whole lot of stories about show business. So if people are interested, they can check that out. I went to the theater a couple weeks ago, actually. It was less than a week ago. Holy crap.
Wow, live theater. Wow.
No, not a live theater.
Oh, you mean the movie theater.
Which is still
not. No, he's not that cultured.
Where right now. And I saw a movie called Nobody, starring Bob Odenkirk. And it's pretty much, I love him too, but this movie is pretty much John Wick, only starring Bob Odenkirk and John Reeves. So if that sounds appealing to you, check it out.
Oh, and, for the episode?
And, no. Eric, you left out the most important part of the movie.
What's that?
Christopher Lloyd.
Okay.
Now, Eric, worth an episode?
I don't know. Watch it.
It depends on if I want to go to a theater or not.
All right. So, I mean, if you want to watch the movie, go watch it, and we'll talk about doing an episode.
For me, it's the best movie I've seen in theaters this year. So.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that many, but I've seen they're piling up now.
Worst case, when it comes on VOD, I'll check it out for sure. But Mike told me that he liked it a real lot. So, as you just said here,
It was entertaining. I just don't know that there's a whole lot to talk about. That's all.
Gotcha.
It's very actiony. That's all.
Well, I like John Wick. So I enjoyed all the John Wick films for what they are.
Yeah, exactly. It's great for what it is. It's just
not as much as I enjoyed the last movie.
Mm-hmm. I also went to the theater and saw The Unholy, which is based on a James Herbert, I believe the author's name is, novel from the 80s called The Shrine.
Isn't he also the one who wrote The Turn of the Screw?
I would have to research that. I don't know off the top of my head. This movie, The Unholy, was fine. It's nothing new or original, but it was executed fairly well. It also had Cary Elwes in it, playing a priest with a Boston accent, Phil.
A very thick Boston accent most of the time.
What's the name of this film again?
The Unholy.
Oh, yeah, right.
So it was okay. I'm not going to jump up and down about it, but it was fine.
Let me ask you a question, Eric.
Yeah.
Now, this could just be because of my Catholic upbringing. Would that have been a better movie if they tried to make it less of a horror movie and took out all the bad CGI and jump scares?
There were some fairly cheesy CGI jump scares. So it was a little bit of an issue, but you know.
Mike, did you like it? Worth an episode?
I don't know if it's worth an episode. I liked it, but kind of like Eric, it's fine. But to me, it's like the jump scares and the CGI at parts were bad. Like,
yes, they were.
Bad. Yeah. I enjoyed the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that might be my you know, Roman Catholic upbringing that made the story appeal to me.
Probably the worst iteration I've seen of the Mary statue crying blood phenomenon.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. So,
but yeah, the more, and there is a horror story there, but the more they turn it into a jump scare horror movie, the more they lean into the horror, the worse of a movie it is. Whereas I think if they just let it,
fair assessment. Yeah.
I think if they just let the story play out as a story with a potentially horrific consequence,
I also
might have worked better.
I started reading the book before I went to see the movie, and I'm pretty sure they made some serious modifications. So I'm interested to finish the book and see what that's all about.
And the book is called Shrine, right?
Yeah.
Right, and it's James Herbert, so it's not who I was thinking, which was Henry James, was from the script.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, James Herbert. Yeah, he was good back in the day. Yeah. Did you say you read the book before, Eric?
No, I said I'm working on reading the book right now.
Gotcha. All right, sounds good. Anybody else have anything?
I've been playing this fun little game on Steam called Death Road to Canada. It's a zombie apocalypse comedy game in which you are playing a bunch of survivors on a road trip to Canada to escape the zombie apocalypse. It's absolutely ridiculous, absolutely silly.
Wait. Do you get to kill Canadians?
No, you got to go to the Canadians. In this case, Canada saves the world.
Worst game ever.
But it's absolutely hilarious.
Like, most unrealistic, anyway.
Ever. But it's a lot of fun. You know, you get to create your own survivors. You can make custom characters, whether based on people you know or other, or just make them up completely with different little quirks and skills and stuff like that, and send them off on a road trip, basically like Oregon Trail meets a beat 'em up. You can pick up, if you have certain skills, you can pick up zombies and toss them around, run around with a chainsaw.
And you get dysentery?
I don't know if you get dysentery, but you can get mauled by feral cats. So it's for all fun. It's definitely recommended if you just want a good, funny comedy game with a lot of replay value. Also, you get to see a Mecha Monty.
Mecha Monty. Kind of like it. All right. Anything else? Anybody? Anyone?
No, obviously, I have seen, if you missed the conversation, Nobody and The Unholy as well. So, but yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, very good. Also, 2 hours and 16 minutes from now, Taylor Swift's new album, Fearless, her version. So
nobody cares, Phil.
Everybody should be
on board, huh? I'm sending you another gift, Phil.
Oh, jeez. Oh, shit. let's see what else. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So before we get into our final opinions on the Block Island Sound, we will give some house cleaning stuff, which is Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called The Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, maybe you and Erica do another monthly tech podcast?
Yeah, we do a semi-monthly podcast, semi because we basically record it on months when we're not already involved in doing other podcasts, which for Eric is an impossibility.
To be fair, I haven't been the problem with this particular one.
No, yeah, that is true. But my point is just that you have now adopted so many podcasts.
Yeah, I understand. We've covered that.
Yes. Anyway, so this podcast is called Cinema a la Carte, and it is a podcast in which Phil and Eric and myself, we get a chance to discuss movies that might not otherwise fit under the Dark Discussions label. So we just finished recording an episode about the 1980 science fiction classic, or cult classic, Flash Gordon. We did an episode on the Michael Mann, Jamie Foxx, Tom Cruise film Collateral. We did one on the Disney film, Pixar film Inside Out. So we're not necessarily dealing with your typical Dark Discussions fare, although sometimes we are. So it really depends. Stuff that's more borderline. Yeah, so if you're interested in what we have to say about something that is not necessarily about rape and murder, but sometimes might be, then...
Just a great description.
Then you can right on in the Cinema a la Carte.
Indeed. And let's see. Barrett, me and you just finished a podcast about The Stand.
Oh, we sure did. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Great podcast.
No, but I want to know.
No, he said don't tell him. He'll tell you.
Yeah.
Tell me.
I just did.
And, yeah,
don't hold out.
Also, me, you, and Kevin Letts just finished another podcast.
A Discovery of Witches, Demons, and Vampires podcast based on a discovery of witches. Great show and great podcast.
Yep, and Phil, do you have another podcast where occasionally you talk about other things?
Yeah, yeah. Mike, you were just a guest host on an episode that's coming up. That's called Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, which is a podcast that basically is catch-all. So it has boutique label cult films. It has brand new Hollywood films. It has art house and foreign films. So that's usually once a month or twice a month podcast as well. So check that out as well.
Yes, I was just thinking about that because
the hosting insanity.
Yes.
Indeed.
I was just going to say because Abe reminded me of that when he talked about people fleeing to Canada for safety, because that ties into the last movie we did.
That's right. That's right. Yep. That movie is the. What's that actor's name? Butler. What's his first name?
Gerard Butler.
Yeah, Gerard Butler's new film, Greenland, that we discussed.
Yeah. I saw that movie.
Yeah. So we talked
Boy,
about that.
Boy, do humans deserve to die.
Indeed. Indeed. We mentioned you a few times on that. Talking about how humans deserve it. And we're going to be doing an episode on the Justice League, the Zack Snyder version, later in April. So look out for that as well. That co-host Mike will be joining us on as well. All right, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts. Well, actually, before we do that, Dan, where can people find you, interact with you, and all that good stuff?
I'm findable on Facebook. I'm findable on Twitter, just my name. I think on Twitter I'm at Dan Lench. And I think my Facebook is my acting page is Daniel Lench Actor. It's DanielLench. And you know, Facebook and Twitter, and I'm also on Instagram, but I'll be danged if I know what my handle is on there. It's probably Dan Lench, so I'm findable, and I always respond. If you've seen any of my films, or you just want to talk about acting or whatever, I'm pretty responsive.
Or you can stare in a mirror and say "Sweater Man" three times,
and I will appear. And do horrible things to you. Yeah, and of course, as I mentioned, catch Circle on Netflix. If you haven't seen it yet, it's a really interesting psychological thriller. Catch Patient 7, which is still on Amazon Prime. It's a good horror anthology starring Michael Ironside. The Lurking Man is a supernatural drama in which I get to play Death, so certainly catch those if you haven't.
Very cool movie.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So, excellent. So, all right, let's give our final thoughts on this film here. So, Eric, why don't you start?
This is a solid little indie film. If you can appreciate that kind of thing, I would recommend checking it out on Netflix.
Excellent. And Barrett?
I really enjoyed this film, and yeah, you should check it out if you like indie films and just general horror.
Excellent. For me, yeah, this film was really, really good. Obviously, I'm a little biased because I love alien space gray films, and this was kind of that. I felt there were some really cool elements. The acting was great. Definitely a little film that could a nice surprise, especially since this year, the films haven't really blown me away, but this one was really good. Could be a top 10 end of the year horror film. Right now it is on the top 10 because there have been some few, but it's good enough that it could stay there. So yeah, big thumbs up for me. Let's go view Abe.
Yeah, I thought this was a really good film. It's a really unsettling psychological science fiction film, which can make, as I mentioned before, has parallels to real life horrors for dealing with mental illness. It has a nice slow burn to it. If you enjoy and if you like that sort of film, it'll be up right up your alley. If you're expecting some kind of creature reveal or anything or something more gory, it's not gonna be your film. But it's got some pretty good performances, some unsettling scenes, and some good payoffs here and there. So I recommend it. If you have a Netflix account, check it out.
All right, very good. And let's go with you, Dan.
Okay, I thought the film itself, the production values were fantastic. I thought the performances were absolutely outstanding. Some really good performances. The slow burn and the disjointedness of some of the storyline and the what I thought were kind of too many false red herrings and too many leaps in logic that didn't make sense to me bothered me a little bit. But overall, it's an interesting film. There's some really great moments and, again, brilliant performances and high production value. So I recommend it on that alone. And it is on Netflix. So if you have it, see it.
All right. And Mike.
Yeah, this is
Mike,
generally
you didn't even
not
see the movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, I was going to say this is not generally my type of film. I have a lukewarm feeling towards it, but I really had trouble watching it, and that was literally because I was having trouble seeing it. Because I've just had a lot of eyes. I mean, I could see fine. It's just I've got a lot of eye strain at the moment.
Mike, just so you know, you should be asking questions, because when you go to get the vaccine, they're not supposed to do that in your eye.
Good point.
No, the
good point,
that, the vaccine they told me they put in your penis. That's
and you can't wait for the second vaccine, or
also, Mike, I'm very disappointed that this type of film, the Grays type of film, is not for you.
No, it's not the Grays. It's the sort of a character descent into madness type of film. Isn't often one that strikes me as something I enjoy watching.
Also, Phil, we don't know they're gray. You're stereotyping. We
yeah, exactly. Saw. Yeah, I know. Sure, oh, my sure, God. Sure.
They could be fish.
This is like when
we did discuss it was the mermaids, right? It could have been the mermaids.
No, this is like when I would have dinner with my father and I'd talk about some kids who were causing problems in school and he'd look at me and be like, are they gray? I was like, oh, God, Dad. Don't be so racist.
I don't even know what that means, but okay. Well, okay. Anyway.
Because Phil, it wasn't gray. It was not the color he used.
Okay. Let's move on. Okay, so what else do you got?
So I would say I would rely on everybody else's opinion more than my own, though.
All right. Very well. Very well. So once again, this is a 2021 film entitled The Block Island Sound. Directed by Kevin and Matthew McManus, which they are brothers. I did some research, and we're assuming that their sister is the lead actress, Michaela McManus. The film stars Chris Sheffield, and also Neville Archambault. The movie is available right now on Netflix, as everybody said, so you can check it out if you're a subscriber to Netflix. And that's pretty much it. So I think with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us on?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about the Block Island Sound. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
Most of the fish we take out of the water, we put right back in just a few days later. We're learning about them. We're studying them so we can get to know them better. So we can help them better. I know it sounds mean and scary. But by taking some brave fish out of the water and learning about them, we can eventually help all the other fish. It's a good thing we're doing.